Welcome to Green and Red, Scrappy Politics for Scrappy People, a regular podcast on radical, environmental and anti-capitalist politics, brought to you by Bob Bazanko and Scott Parkin.
Welcome to the silky smooth sounds of the Green and Red podcast. I'm your co-host, Scott Parkin, in Berkeley, California. Bob is off on assignment today, but today we're joined by our good friend and comrade, Jason Miles, who's a musician, writer, and host of This Is Revolution podcast, which Bob and I have been on more than a few times. And so we're excited to have you here, Jason.
Sorry, I'm muting myself. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here. You guys have some big time guests, so it makes me feel like I'm mildly important in the realm of left media.
You're more than mildly important. You're at least miles important. So there.
So, at the very least, going to be that much.
And so we're going to say that again.
I said, thank you for having me.
Yeah, we are excited to have you here. We've wanted to have you on for a while. And we're going to be talking about a documentary project that you've been working on, probably some other stuff. But just to give a little background, summer of 2015, Donald Trump rides down the escalator, announced he's running for president. And plenty of people during that time and since then has noted the relationship he's had with Vince McMahon and his links to professional wrestling, the WWE. He's in the WWE Hall of Fame, I believe. And sometimes it's goofy and campy, but it's also a sort of important element of the culture war, which Trump has used to rise to power. And so Jason has a new documentary called Kayfabe, which is about pro wrestling and Trump politics and MAGA politics and right-wing politics. And so we're going to just talk about that a little bit today. Tell us a little bit about what your documentary project Kayfabe is, and then we'll talk about what actual Kayfabe is.
Sure. The documentary project was something I wanted to take on because I was watching, I was watching a wrestling documentary series that I think Vice does called like Dark Side of the Ring. And one thing that I had gathered from it, the more episodes I watched, was the way that wrestling is and also the way that we consume media, kind of like the way we consume both these things, I found very interesting. Because with wrestling, we all know that it's fake. We all know that it's scripted. But why do we tune in for it? And I feel like we tune in for it because of the drama that's involved with wrestling. So I wanted to start following a certain trajectory. And that trajectory is cable news media and the rise of Trump and Sanders, because I think those two things don't really work without each other. And I think you and I being able to have the audience that we have right now, regardless of whatever we've done before Bernie Sanders comes into a public consciousness, he is a big factor of left politics being trendy, acceptable, whatever word you want to use. I think his rise and Trump's rise work together like pro wrestling, good guys and bad guys, Hulk Hogan and Rowdy Piper. So I wanted to use pro wrestling, which is something that even if you hate it, you still know what it is, to really describe media and the way media works.
It's the face and the heel, right? Isn't that what they call it in the pro wrestling lingo?
Face and the heel. So kayfabe is actually an old vaudevillian term that goes back to not letting people in on the trick. You don't let them know that the strong man is lifting plastic weights. The bearded lady's got stuff glued on. You don't let people in on the gag, right? If two wrestlers are fighting each other, even though they're friends outside of the ring, you never pull up to the match in the same car because people can see you. So Donald Trump really has a public pivot, in my opinion, around the time that he really starts to get involved with WWE or WWF wrestling and Vince McMahon. They have similar stories, sons of very successful fathers. The difference between Vince McMahon and Donald Trump is that he was able to take his father's wrestling enterprise, which was extremely territorial at the time. And when I say territorial, even wrestlers that people know today, like Macho Man Randy Savage, is part of a wrestling family that ran territories. If you're old enough, you probably remember when maybe you had a local wrestling promotion and It was like Smoky Mountain Wrestling, wrestling, California Wrestling, West Coast Wrestling.
Well, I grew up in Dallas, Texas, and the only thing bigger than the Von Erich family, which they've actually just made a feature film about, and I think there's a recent documentary about it, were the Dallas Cowboys. That's how big the Von Erichs were. Like, I'm Gen X. I grew up in the 80s and in Dallas, Texas, and that was, like, huge.
Von Erichs were huge, and they were part of, I think, WCW.
Yeah, they were part of the NWA at one point, I think.
NWA was a, which I think Billy Corgan owns the NWA right now.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to think. So there were these wrestling promotions, and they started getting the cable TV. Vince McMahon had a much larger vision, which seems silly to unite these promotions, because this is almost mafia-like with these promotions. People got really hurt. People got murdered. It's real. When I say murdered, I don't mean like in the 50s. I mean in the 80s. Murdered at some of these promotions.
Right. So
the fact that he was going to unite them really shows a certain amount of business acumen to be able to get it done. It's getting done in capitalism, so he's not doing it in a nice way. It's very cutthroat. But he's able to do it. Around the same time, Vince McMahon is growing out this worldwide wrestling federation. Ted Turner has this idea that also is pretty insane. He's going to take this thing that for years hasn't necessarily been a moneymaker and have a 24-hour news station, which was looked at as maybe one of the most retarded business moves you can make. How would you have news 24 hours? It's local, and nationally it doesn't make money like that. And there's these major networks and people tune in at a specific time to watch the news. He's like, 24 hours. And the first episode, it's going to be a multi-part series. Originally it was all one documentary, and it was about 2 hours long, and it was dense, Scott.
Yeah.
Wanted to throw in also examples, in my opinion, of how kayfabe operates. And there's no better way to me to show that than things like O.J. Simpson is a great way to show how kayfabe operates. And then for me also, maybe because I'm a Bay Area guy as well. You're at Berkeley. I went to high school in Albany, California. I'm from Richmond, California. I was born in Oakland. Only for the last 4 years have I lived in, not in the Bay. But Scott Peterson was a huge story for us in the Bay in 2003, I think that was. So we wrote a whole part of, or I wrote a whole part of Kayfabe. That is, we talk about Scott Peterson and Johnny Depp and Amber Heard and the way that those things were presented. I think a lot of what we don't understand with wrestling and Kayfabe is there's reality in wrestling as well, right? These guys are actually taking bumps and bruises. There's a thing called a work, and there's something called a shoot. A work means it's fake. You know, right. You and I are fighting. It looks real because we're not fighting in a ring. We're fighting off camera. Maybe even we go so far as to spit on one another or something like that, or really slap one another. It could still be a work. We work that out beforehand. This is what we're going to do. So we want to hype up a match. It's never been about the actual fight. With wrestling, people talk about, oh, Hogan was never a great wrestler. This person never a great wrestler. No one cares about your acrobatic ability in a wrestling ring, much like we don't really care about your thing ability in a soap opera or a reality show. It's about drama that you can present us with. So it's these side stories that really get you excited for the match. So whenever you would see the Mean Gene Okerlunds or insert interview guy here with a microphone in his face talking about the next match, called a promo. Talk crazy about your opponent. You're going to talk crazy about the town you may be going into because you want people to show up either to boo you or to cheer you. Mm-hmm. We want people to show up. And that's called having heat.
Yeah.
We have it in our world as well, right? There are figures even in left media that say things that are extremely controversial or contrarian. And you ask yourself, like, why is this person even bothering to say this? Because they want that heat. And like, whatever you want to call it.
Clicks.
Right? It's the same thing, right? But it's like heat. You want that. Because when you actually do the show, everybody's tuning in. And sometimes nothing is said of any value. That's the allure of the thumbnail. The thumbnail now is the promo. Maybe someone cuts a clip or something. But generally, it's thumbnail BS to me is the equivalent of heat. But in that, you can actually have real fights. And there are actual fights that take place in the ring that are not scripted. And that's called a shoot. And they have also other little terms inside there. Here's your receipt. So let's say you and I are wrestling. And if you ever notice, they talk to each other in the ring as well. Hey, make it look real. Make me bleed or something like that.
Yeah.
Sometimes they need to do that for a match because it's picky or whatever. And if you go too hard, or if I almost break your arm, or if I do break your arm or knock you unconscious, one of those things I'm not supposed to do, I have to give you your receipt for that gift. And that receipt may be knocking you even out.
Yeah.
So there's reality in it. There's works and shoots. And that's how kayfabe operates. It operates in this world of real and fake, real and fake. And the news operates in the same kind of world. Whereas if someone gets shot, they really got shot.
They're not
picking up the fact they got shot. But how is it presented to you? Is it presented to you in a way where now you're scared because like there was a shooting in Berkeley, California, in South Berkeley? That's okay. That's an innocuous statement. But crime spree continues in South Berkeley, California, as a group of young assailants assaulted someone. And there's these works and shoots that are happening with news as well that influences the way we see the world. And what really got me interested in Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders is both of these guys are perfect pro wrestling characters. They both come from New York. They both have these incredibly New York accents, right? Donald Trump does sound like just a regular guy from Queens, even though he's a ridiculously rich man. Bernie Sanders is from Brooklyn, and he's got that Brooklyn accent. And I always ask people, I was like, if Donald Trump didn't sound like that, if Bernie Sanders sounded like Gavin Newsom and said the exact same thing, would you listen to him the same way? There's something about these guys, authenticity, people buy into. I mean, it makes for great television. And I think had that election in 2016 played out differently, where you would have gotten those two people, I think everything would have played out differently. But instead, and I talk about this in the later episodes of this series, you get heel versus heel, which is Hillary Clinton, who, as much as she wants to be a baby face, she's a heel.
Yep. It's true.
So it doesn't work the same way because we're not seeing it as the baby face savior coming in to save the day. And as much as it's trying to be presented that way, it just doesn't work well. She's almost like the ultimate warrior in that regard. If you want to go back to wrestling jargon, they didn't really know what to do with him because he was such a problem. He was actually hurting people in the ring. He wasn't a very good wrestler. He didn't listen. But fans liked him for a hot minute until they didn't. And he goes by the wayside, which we've seen with Hillary Clinton as well.
It seems like the theater element of this, that you're, of what you're talking about, really resonates, particularly since Trump entered politics and 10 years ago. And because I was actually thinking about it, I was like, when I thought about Bush and Kerry in 2004, that was boredom, right? Or Gore and Bush, boring, snooze fest. But then when we get Trump, it like, I actually feel like and you were living here at the time, I think, and it was before I was living here. But when Schwarzenegger ran for governor and there was the recall, there was that, there's that element of theater there. And then there's all of these young men who probably weren't even, who were apathetic and didn't vote, all just got extremely excited to vote. And so I see a similarity between that. And it's like this celebrity who is like an action star. And then you have this over the top billionaire who was actually involved in the wrestling world. The same sort of people got very excited about him. And I'm wondering how you think that sort of celebrity who plays into this vaudeville theater that comes with wrestling, how does that fit in with the culture wars that we're seeing?
I think when people try to compare Donald Trump to Ronald Reagan, I think that's a really horrible comparison because Reagan had a long time in elected office. He was elected as the SAG Guild president. Whether or not he was a snitch, that doesn't matter. They're still elected in an elected office. He was governor of California. And I don't say this because I think he's a person to revere. I think he's a horrible person. I think he laid waste to California. What Ronald Reagan was able to do because of his elected positions and his notoriety as an actor was he was able to go on a campaign after he lost the primary election and talk about what he was able to accomplish without anyone pushing back.
No.
Meaning he was able to go on things like Johnny Carson and go, California, we saved a lot of taxpayers' money because we cut back all this welfare. People were getting too much aid. It worked.
Yeah.
There's a huge difference between Donald Trump and him in that regard. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump is the only person that we've seen in our life in the U.S. context, because it's happened in other countries, mm-hmm. literally walk off a reality show set into the White House. That really speaks to the failures of neoliberalism in both parties. And how people want to see anyone do anything real. And again, that's why I think Bernie Sanders and now AOC to a certain degree really resonate with a lot of people. There's going to be people here that say things like Bernie Sanders is a sheepdog and AOC is this and that. It's like, you're talking about online BS and real lefty minutia. Let's talk about...
Contained opposition is actually the word I've been seeing a lot. Contained the term. Opposition. Yeah. Contained yeah. opposition is what I've been seeing a lot of lately.
Sure. And you go, I get what you're saying, but let's look at this outside of our small milieu of leftism and look at it from a grander scheme of what they're actually doing and what American people are seeing. Even if Trump is fucking up, and he is massively, right? He's still doing things. So for the fans, and I don't say supporters, I think he has fans, and it's very different. You have one side that just was tired of the same old. I'm talking about Trump 2.0. So they vote for him. And there's certain culture war things where there was a victory lap, let's say the Democratic Party was running and it got to be too much. And so people wanted to rein some of that in. So you vote for Donald Trump, but now you have the backlash of that, which is you're going to get what you pay for. And this is all the things that you wanted him to do in 2016 that you didn't really want him to do. He's doing it now. Deportations, doing it. Arresting judges, doing it. Rolling back civil rights. And a lot of people are like, but we win it. We're supposed to get
ignoring the Supreme Court.
Which is massive, right?
Death.
So Trump uses the pro wrestling angle constantly. Like most villains, people will tire of you. And the villain shtick, I thought, got old for him when he was in office. And the only thing that got him reelected is really the failures of the other party. The Democratic Party is really a fumbling of massive. I can't think of a fumbling this big. All you have to do is do very little. Okay. Very little of the American people are on board. Most of them are disengaged anyway. Most of us, more than half of the voting public, are pretty disengaged politics. They don't care anymore because of the political theater that has always played out. So it's a minority of individuals that sway these elections one way or the other. It was a minority of individuals that swayed it for Trump. There's a minority of individuals that swayed it for Biden. And now this minority came back in 2024. But even they are at what they're seeing, because you're supposed to arrest the bad people. Who are the bad?
Not my wife or my cousin's wife. It happens or even to be undocumented.
Not my coworker, not the person.
Yeah.
Does my lawn. Like, I need that guy to want to come to work. There is a massive backlash from the American people, which is interesting because I don't know how this is going to run for him. Because also, too, you're seeing businesses preemptively make price adjustments for tariff purposes and also use tariffs as a scaremongering tactic to get people to buy things. Now, hey, buy this thing that you looked at, well, because the tariffs are coming. And so his trade war, and I use finger quotations when I say trade war, which was one part kayfabe and two parts real, is backfiring on him massively.
Yeah.
And I don't know how this is going to work out. We did a show earlier this morning on This Is Revolution. We talked about the Canadian elections, and Pierre Vers, the conservative leader, was the incumbent to be the next premier. It's not premier. What is it?
Prime minister. It's prime.
Premier. I'm so sorry, Canada. The next minister of Canada. And now there's been like a 25-point swing post Trump's declaration to take over an entire sovereign nation and then tariff them to that.
And make it the 51st state.
Yeah, the 51st state proclamation, which again, the kayfabe that he's all about, and is having disastrous effects for even people that would have been part of his kind of right-wing coalition.
Cool.
he's an interesting character because he really wants to live and die by being a character. And when you go back and look at a guy like Donald Trump, he always didn't want to be the villain. He wanted to be a working class savior. For a minute, he was like a Gatsby-esque character early on in life as this dashing rich man about town.
Yeah.
Certain socialites didn't care for in New York. And he's transformed over the years. There's a reason why rappers love him, and it's not because he called him the N-word. You know, rappers loved him because he was this embodiment of success and power. And he liked to hang out with them as well. So I think it speaks to a certain amount of his being top, as much as people like to look at that as some sort of music of authenticity.
It's okay.
I guess they were authentically neoliberal in every case.
I think part of it, I think maybe this is his appeal to what we would call the flyover states, or like certain areas of the flyover states, is that he also was not afraid to tell you like it was and tell off these sort of coastal elites, right? The establishment, the liberal establishment, Washington, D.C., and New York, and San Francisco. And I think that sort of anti-elitism also like really plays into it, which also like speaks to pro wrestling too, because it's like it's a sport, if you see it as a sport, of the working man. And it's also, it's not the sort of genteel establishment that has been running the country for a long time, 100 years or whatever.
If you think about a guy like Roddy Piper, early in his career, he used to do a wrestling promotion in Southern California. There's a place called the Olympic Auditorium, I believe it's called, mm-hmm. in Los Angeles. And they had these big wrestling matches. I think they hold about 18,000 people or held. I don't know if it's around. And one of his most famous things that he did that, and it was run by Latin people, was he wanted to apologize for being so racist, because part of his character was be a heel, be a racist. He said with his bagpipes, he was going to sing the Mexican national anthem. And he came out and everybody was ready for him to apologize and sing the Mexican national anthem. And he sings La Cucaracha on his bagpipes. And chairs start whining. The promoters have to get him out of there. I think his car was destroyed. And they're like, that was the greatest thing we've ever seen. You have so much heat on you. This is great. When you come from that world,
yeah,
all you understand is heat. And he really is good at. And the sad part about, and then again, another reason why I wanted to make this thing is, he spent all of 2015 and 2016 heat. Ted Cruz's dad killed Kennedy.
Yep.
Marco, whatever he called Hillary Clinton. I think he had a name for her.
Cruz was Lion Ted.
Oh, Lion Ted, right. Yeah.
Hillary was Lion Hillary.
Lion Hillary. Fake news, to me, is something that an old person says that shouldn't resonate culturally the way that it resonated culturally. But anything that came out of his mouth had to be something that was repeated a million times. It's happening again. But again, this time around, he actually went through with a lot of the things that he said he was going to do, and teaming up with Elon Musk with Doge, this program, gosh, really has destroyed a lot of families. But he's doing things when he didn't do them before. And again, I think he's going to always lean back on pro wrestling jargon. He doesn't care if people have bad things to say. He really doesn't, because in his mind, it's Roddy Piper playing the Cucaracha to piss people off. It's like, I got all this heat. When the media talks about me, I win. And to his credit, he's right.
Yeah.
When he's 16, the media wouldn't stop talking about him, he win. 2024, we forget there was a time where no one cared about Donald Trump. Biden gets elected, COVID calms down, all these black people got the George Floyd money and started making these movies that I can't stand, like American Fiction and the World of Magical Negroes. So
he leaves his first term with at the time was like the ultimate heat generating event, which is January 6th. It was like the battle royale, as to put it in wrestling jargon.
I like that. I never put it that way. I like battle royale.
Didn't he tweet about a month before January 6th that everyone should go to Washington, D.C. because it's going to be a wild event. I don't remember the exact quote, but something like that.
Yeah. No, he did hype it up, and he said things to hype it up at that end rally, because I really think, A, he was scared to go to prison. B, he saw his coalition really turn on him.
Yeah.
From the VP on down. He ran people out of the White House left and right, because there's people that have more of an allegiance to the Constitution and more of an allegiance to the order of things, even if they're people that we wouldn't be cool with and we wouldn't look at as allies. And I wouldn't go so far as to say like Lincoln Project people. I would say people within the military industrial complex don't dig him. Like right now, I'm sure there's people that are trying to like literally hold him back from pressing a nuke button on China.
Or Iran. Yeah.
That's how ridiculous this man is.
Yeah.
And January 6th was a moment, and I think this kind of leads into why he was forgettable for a hot second, where you saw the failure. And if you voted for him, and I don't think that everyone that voted for Donald Trump is necessarily a racist or a bad person. I think you're tired of the status quo. I agree with you wholeheartedly that he does speak to a certain kind of working class sensibility where you don't want people to lie to you. I want you to be straight with me. Even if you're going to do things negatively, at least you're telling me the truth. I don't like that mindset, but I understand it. But January 6th is a moment where you see why that's not a good way. It was a scary moment. And if people look at it as they shrug their shoulders, and you shouldn't shrug your shoulders at life. That's insane.
Yeah.
Because what happened with January 6th, and this is my opinion, I don't know if you share this opinion, as someone that actually goes out and protests a lot, my fear was there's going to be laws written, and there's going to be a precedent set, and have January 6th again. So if Scott and Jason are out saying, please stop bombing little kids, the police come out and shoot you, and people go, we're just protecting you from another January 6th. It was me.
That is still my fear on many levels. And I have that fear. As our audience knows, I organize a lot of protests and large scale stuff. And my fear is that we're still headed down that. But now that Trump's come in, he's put out an executive order that's saying that you can't have unpermitted rallies and protests in DC any longer. And I don't think that's because of what happened on January 6th. I think that's because he wants to have more control over like left movements. But I also think that the sort of decline away from what I would call First Amendment protected activity, like happened a long time before January 6th. We could take that back to 1968, as far as I'm concerned.
And when we think about 1968 compared to January 6th, like there's this moment people go, oh, if those people were all black, they would have shot him. True. You can go back to 68. It wasn't all black people that got shot at Kent.
Yeah, there was all white. Jackson State a few days later was all white.
Two black people got killed at Jackson State. Still, you got killed protesting. That's insane.
Yeah.
And we looked at 68 and said, we can't do that because you're going to make martyrs.
Yep.
And we're not into making martyrs in this country. They tried to make a martyr out of, was it Ashley Babbitt? That's the young lady that got shot. But it's hard to make a martyr out of a person that broke through a window that was trying to like harm a sitting congressperson.
I think that was in Pelosi's office too. I think it was the speaker.
Yeah, you're not going to make it. And they're not the only people that have rushed Congress. I think in the 30s or 40s, someone rushed into Congress with a gun. It was for Puerto Rican independence. So it's not the first time it's happened. But the first time it's happened like that in our modern time, where we can actually see it live time, I think that backfired on it. And then the Democrats went full hog and they're like, we're going to play some kayfabe with you. And we're going to make this out to be the insurrection of all insurrections.
Yes.
We're going to try to put everybody on trial and make everyone pay the biggest penalty for this that they possibly can. And I think that worked for 5 minutes.
I also would say that they took that to us to an extent with the participants and the organizers of the storming of the Capitol, but the members of Congress who supported and participated in that, no repercussions. Trump, no repercussions. I guess towards the end of Biden's term, they tried to indict him over that, but they should have done that coming out of the gate in January 2021 when they came out. If Bob were here, he would go off a lot about Merrick Garland. Right now, he has a lot of strong feelings about how he was a do-nothing attorney general.
You have a moment. This is the thing. This is getting back to the whole idea, I mean, for how kayfabe works. You get so invested in Trump being the big bad and the fascist evil, and there's a lot of truth to that. But once he's out of office, and there's an exhale, and then again, then there's like a victory lap that's ran. And I really feel like that happened after 2020.
Yeah, sure.
Where people really did get broke off. And this is where the Democratic Party, in my opinion, lost a lot of people. The solution to a lot of these complaints, from defunding the police to mass incarceration, isn't jobs programs. It's entrepreneurialism through the foundation. We give you all this money for incubator companies and startup things and your arts projects and your fucking book. And people ate it up until they didn't want to eat it up anymore. Remember we had Oscar So White? Like, where did that hashtag go? They're still white.
Yeah, it's true.
No one cares anymore. Everybody got paid and broke off. And
that wasn't a thing this year, was it?
No, it hasn't been a thing for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
You take a movie like American Fiction, which won a bunch of Oscars, which I looked at as like the last gasp of the George Floyd moment. Like, yeah, we gave you people all of your, I'm sorry, reparations funding money. We let you make this movie that is extremely dishonest to the book that it's based on. Percival Everett writes this amazing piece of fiction where within the novel, he writes another novel mocking Native Son, but using an entire black cast instead of white people to tell the story of class contradictions in the black community. And that movie takes the real life characters, the real life characters, and makes them white. So now white libs can love it because they get to be in on the joke. Oh, what a great movie. It was so funny seeing those stupid liberals. But those were black people in real life. You don't know about the movie Precious, apparently. You don't know who Sapphire is that wrote the book that it was based on. So you think this is really how people talk? No, the white director. That's supposed to be Lee Daniels, a black man.
Yeah.
Their white show host is supposed to be Oprah Winfrey. Like, these are supposed to be black people saying all these things. So that movie really misses an important point. And that moment is just, to me, it's just lost. What do we take away from all that talk about the failures of the 90s? You're in the Bay Area. I was just in the Bay Area and you were at the live and we were at. So I think you know how passionate I am about that moment, because it was scary. It was, first of all, it was scary growing up in the 90s in the Bay. I'm from Richmond, California, which was a bad neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah.
My city, there was an exodus of people that left as the financial sector got deregulated and became easier to buy a house. Everybody went to the East County, which is going to be like Antioch, Concord, Pleasant Hill. Some people went as far as Livermore and the Central Valley because they wanted to get away from the reality of effed up school systems, drive-by shootings and crack houses. I want to move to the suburbs.
Right.
Kind of stuff. And now Richmond, when I was graduating high school, I think it was about 40% black. It's about 17 or 20% now, but I think it's half the population speaks a different language other than English, and it wasn't the case before. And though it's a different kind of gentrification, but it does look different. But the solution that we had for, again, high crime rates was containment. But it was, again, we're talking about real murders. And now we're talking about smash and grab robberies. It's supposed to be the same thing as the 90s war on drugs. And we're going to have the same level of mass incarceration, which failed. So when I look at that moment, I think there's positives that come from it. I think certain amount of organizing for labor comes out of it, right? I think it's like Starbucks union movements, I think, really blow up during the George Floyd moment. But the downside is here we are 5 years later And we've rolled everything back that we got from political victories, people like Jason Boudin, let's say, a true leftist prosecute DA that says things like, let's get rid of cash bail. That was a moment where all these people were running for offices like DA or city council. Well, let's get rid of cash bail. Let's have this kind of, let's actually prosecute law enforcement that acts rogue. That's gone in 6 years, and we're back to 1980.
Or three or four years. So it was out in 2022 in Alameda County, actually elected a person with similar politics to Chesa to be their district attorney, which is Pamela Price. They just recalled her last November. They did just elect, Oakland just elect Barbara Lee mayor this week. But I do want to say that part of this also, though, is that we've had this great wealth accumulation, and we have all these billionaires who are the ones who are funding the campaigns against Chesa and against Pamela Price and the former mayor of Oakland, who also just got recalled. And so I think that's actually a piece of this, too, is that there's governmental policies to sort of contain crime or what have you. And crime is nothing like it was like in the 70s or even the 80s. My punk friends who moved to the Mission in the 80s said that taxi cabs wouldn't come to the Mission after dark, because it was like that intense. But now we have this, I think we're headed back to that because we have this great wealth divide going on. And part of it is that the progressives who are actually trying to do something to not let it go back, slip back into that, are being targeted and removed.
And even people that aren't that progressive, I don't think London Breed is progressive in stretch of the imagination, and the fact that they wanted to get her out. And even Pamela Price, who was nearly as ideologically progressive as someone like Chesa Boudin.
Yeah.
In fact, wanted to get her out because, again, people are looking at insurance rates going up. And I think this is also where we really need to understand, and this is where kayfabe and the media really come into play, is I'm only going to present you the story from this kind of one angle, and you're not even going to really understand maybe the class confluences that you have for things like gentrification. If you're a homeowner, and your homeowner's insurance is going to go up or go away because of these smash and grab robberies, you probably want to vote for tougher policies because you think that the solution is containment. Your property taxes might be going up. There's definitely a reason your school district is suffering, right? These are real reasons why people vote necessarily not in their best interests and not really being a force for the trees, because we are very immediate in our analysis. Mm-hmm. And I watch local news. I watch KPIX and KTVU, Channel 2, still YouTube from Mexico. And it's a parade of frightening stories. Don't go to the gas station by the Coliseum because you're going to get robbed. Don't go to the airport. Don't go here. Don't go there. This person got robbed. They're bipping, so we're going to make it sound cool. I think all that stuff is definitely happening. The fear mongering works for me. I park my car in a parking garage when I was in San Francisco and paid a hefty sum of money. I don't make a lot of money. And almost all of the money that I made from that show, sans $50, went to parking my car.
In San Francisco.
In San Francisco.
Yeah.
Because I was terrified of the street. And I don't have a nice car. I have an 0700. Oxidated to the hell because I lived by that machine. Here, but still, I don't want somebody to bust out the window just to do it because this was a Bay Area resident.
Grab a fucking pair of sunglasses or something.
Yeah. And I don't even have that in my car.
Yeah.
Are you going to steal all my pesos?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the scaremongering has worked, but I haven't seen anyone really take a step back and say, is this really a moment where you think people should be locked up for 10 years because they stole a whole bunch of makeup from CVS?
Hey.
Is that really the solution?
No.
I know people that boosted clothes back in the day. It's not like it's a new phenomenon. And all the people that I know that used to clothes back in the day have regular jobs.
Yeah.
Young people do.
In the protest political world, same thing. There's a level of cruelty and lack of mercy and mercilessness going on with those in power, whether they're Democrats or Republicans. Thinking about it in protest world is that if you vandalize a Tesla, depending on the level of vandalism you do, if you set it on fire, they want to basically send you to the terror prison in El Salvador as a terrorist. But even people who like key them or spray paint them, they want to send them to jail for 20 years. And I think that's part of it too. And I think that's part of the appeal of Trump in particular, is that like, we're going to be just as cruel and harsh and without mercy as we can on anyone who goes against us or goes against what we see as the law. And whether that's shoplifting in CVS or keying a Tesla. Which includes Tim Walz's staff, by the way. I don't know if you saw that story.
They keyed a Tesla?
A member of Tim Walz's staff in the Minnesota State House got caught on video keying a Tesla in Minneapolis. In Paul or wherever.
Elon tried to run back not just the drop off in stock price, but the fact that this thing that he made is now a symbol of the bad guy.
Yeah.
Might as well be a TIE fighter if you're a Star Wars fan.
He's the old, back on the wrestling jargon, I think he's more of a heel to the world than Trump at this point.
Yeah. And he's gone. He had to be removed because it's probable. And whether he did it himself or whether it was an agreed upon decision, I think the fact that his vehicle that's supposed to be a status symbol, and I've never seen anything like this happen again in my lifetime, where something that goes from status symbol, liberal status symbol at that.
One out of five cars in Berkeley.
How insane is that? And for those that don't know what Berkeley is like, it is like whatever stereotype you think, that's a Berkeley.
Berkeley is a place where they have people have a Black Lives Matter sticker on their car and a Ukraine flag on their car, which I think says a lot.
Or coexist next to that. Berkeley is a place where, do you remember when Kamau Bell got yelled at by a cafe owner, the comedian?
I don't remember that.
Because he has the wild hair. He's got a white wife and kid. So he was like walking up to see his wife and kid, and the cafe owner would basically shoot him away because he was a homeless guy. He got upset about it, made a social media post, and the restaurant got shut down. That's Berkeley to me in a nutshell.
Right.
We're going to shut down a business because a celebrity got disrespected.
I'm sure there's a guy who's been harassing the takedown Tesla protests in Berkeley, and he pulled out a taser and tased a couple of them a couple of weeks ago. He owns a small business here in Berkeley on University. I'm sure that his business, like, I know that his business Facebook page is down, for example.
Oh, yeah. That's like the high school I went to, which was a lot of hippies kids. They were trying to institute a curfew. We were in high school in Albany, and the kids went to the city hall to stand up to the man.
I do have another kayfabe question. I have two more kayfabe questions, which I think are going to be interesting. Is going back on the wrestling thing and Trump, how do you think the wrestling angle plays into Trump's obsession with his crowd sizes?
Again, back to the Roddy Piper and the Cucaracha thing, I think it's all about heat. Yeah. And I think he only understands the world. His ideology isn't one of left or right or conservative or liberal. It's about attention. It's literally attention. So when he says, look at my crowds, I have the biggest crowds, that's what like musicians say. That's, if you really want to talk to musicians, you get to a certain level, you talk about what size room you're playing in, right? Because there's goals in your success. If I'm playing a 200 seat room, I'm not making much money. If I'm playing the Warfield, which is I think a little under 3,000 seats, maybe a little over 3,000 seats, making a couple bucks, probably have a production truck out there, probably touring in a bus, doing all right. So that's how we judge the success of somebody. Fish recently played the Bill Graham. The Bill Graham holds
this week.
Okay, this week. Okay, so yep. The Bill Graham holds 8,500 people. They used to do numbers, the Bill Graham. So when Fish plays, the last time I did numbers for a Fish show, in just food and beverage alone, they do about $500,000. They sell out every seat. They do about $500,000 for those 2 days. Everybody's in the black.
Yeah.
Fish performs. They don't need a bigger room. But when you think about room sizes, that's how we judge artists. That's also how the Coachellas of the world used to. It's different now. but they used to judge by what size room you're playing. That's going to determine where you play on the bill, how big your name's going to be, and all that kind of plays in the heat. So I think as president, you really shouldn't care about crowd size because you're the president. I think he still sees the world in that lens of heat, and I still have a good crowd size, ergo I still have influence.
And I assume that it's going to, the same sort of thing where it's going to apply to what happened when the assassination attempt happened, is that it, leading into the RNC, I mean, there's like a whole bunch of wrestling element there, but he basically does his kayfabe. He does his theater after he gets like wounded in the ear.
With respect to works and shoots, there's people that believe that was all set up.
Yep.
Had he not gotten it, maybe I'd believe. Someone actually not died, maybe I'd believe.
Yeah.
But those two are exact, right?
Yes.
To say, I don't think it's all staged, but I will say this to kayfabe's point. Fight.
Yeah.
That's all pro wrestling. That was a huge pivot for him when it comes to attention, because now I was in the States actually when it happened. I think it was in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have TV. I definitely relish in the luxury of being in a hotel room with the television, and every channel I turned it on in my downtown San Francisco hotel room was Donald Trump and someone talking about fight. And I found that fascinating because I was like, he's back. And I had wrote a piece in 2022 for Sublation Media called Donald Trump Was Having His Chinese Democracy Moment, which is Guns N' Roses' record that nobody liked. Because I felt like after January 6th, after the trials, after COVID, after George Floyd's summer, he was persona non grata and he just wasn't garnering the clicks. There was a moment where you would say Trump's name as a thumbnail, back to literally our own heat, right? You use Trump as a thumbnail. And you got views, you got engagement, you got people pissed off. Jordan Peterson was the same way for a while. And it just went away. Nobody cared about him anymore. And I was like, oh, people are finally tired of him. Then he gets shot at. And it's like, you couldn't write it in a script any better. But it goes back to the works and shoots at kayfabe. You do need reality for this to work. You can't just make stuff up all the
time. Yeah, yeah.
And what he's been able to do is capitalize on, I don't want to say foolishness, but the insanity of like real world things like assassination attempt. There's been other people that have ran for office that had assassination attempts that didn't walk through the presidency the same way.
Yeah.
So I do think he's able to do that quite well. I feel like the heat on that is gone as well.
Yeah. And he pivoted that into the RNC. The timing was incredible. And the way it pivoted into the RNC and his acceptance speech as he's introduced by Hulk Hogan, the elements of kayfabe are just like all, now that we're talking about it, it's all over everything he's doing, at least through the election.
And I've seen, what's funny is I've seen some articles come out recently about Donald Trump and wrestling. And I don't think I'm the first person to come up with that analogy.
Yeah.
It just, we really went deep into not just Trump, but cable news and the way that we digest media, because I think all of that works together. Donald Trump can't exist without third presentation in the media, because if you give it to people the way it really is, this non-self-made man whose whole life has been a bit of a facade, maybe you look at him differently, but because he was a figure on television as a boss for so long and a powerful one at that, it's easier to accept him as a smart man. Like I've ran into that. I don't know what it is about my face. People feel comfortable to want to talk to me about politics down here in Rosarito, maybe because I'm so visibly American. I always run into a person with kind of small businessman mentality where they're very happy that a businessman is running the country because they think that business people make sensible decisions because they themselves might be a small businessman of some kind. So they think about their employees' well-being. They think about trying to grow their business, whatever it is, and be responsible. I'm like, that's small businessman thinking. That's not when you actually have a massive company, you don't care about things like the environment or workers. It's all about exploitation and growth. And you've never been big enough to think about those things on a certain scale. So small businessman thinking, I think it's like a lot of people have.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm competing with the economy, I think, too.
Yep. My last question is about his relationships in professional wrestling. We talked about Vince McMahon a little bit. He has made Vince McMahon's wife the Secretary of Education. Just, is there anything that you think we should know about the sort of relationship he has with the McMahons in particular, or anyone else in that world? Because it seems to be is very relevant.
I think they're just really close friends, and I think he learned a lot from Vince McMahon. I think he really learned how to be a professional villain.
Yeah.
One thing you have to know about Vince McMahon is for years that he owned the WWF and E. No one knew he was the owner. He was a ringside announcer for a lot of people. And it's not really until this incident. We actually have a whole episode about this incident because one thing I want to talk about with kayfabe is for it to really work, the audience has to know it's fake. People have to see the sausage be made. And there's a moment where Donald Trump says in 2016, I know the game is rigged because I'm the one that pays the politicians, so I'm going to drain the swamp. At the same time, you have someone like Bernie Sanders really laying waste to the way we think about healthcare in this country and what can actually be done. And that's a moment where I think it's a bit mask off. And there's a thing in wrestling that's called the Montreal Screwjob, where Bret Hart was supposed to step down as champion and have a match with a guy named Shawn Michaels. And Bret Hart did not get along with Shawn Michaels. And he said, I'm not going to give up the belt to Shawn Michaels. I'll fight him and win. And then after I win, I'll retire and you can give him the belt. But I personally don't want to give him the belt.
Right.
Not how wrestling works. So there's a thing called the Montreal Screwjob. And there's differing opinions about it. And I don't necessarily give my opinion or answer on what I think really happened. But whatever you think happened, what actually happened was Shawn Michaels pinned him very quick. And a camera pulls in on Bret Michaels and he writes WCW because he was leaving for the WCW. He spit on Vince McMahon and apparently he punched him.
Yeah.
He really did punch him because Vince McMahon had an actual black eye. And instead of going on their little wrestling shows, those guys went on real sports shows afterwards and talked about what was going on. And Vince McMahon really starts to make himself the ruler of the evil empire. At that moment, sorry, this really loud noise, I don't understand. So Donald Trump, also around that time, stops being an aspiring lib. Even though he's always had these moments of trying to be a working, like during the Central Park Five, he took that one page ad out and said that they should all get the death penalty and stuff like that. And hasn't backed down from that since. He's also the guy in Home Alone 2. He's also the guy that was friends with the Clintons and was a donor to the party, Denver party. But his relationship with Vince McMahon, in my opinion, really showed him how to be, as he got older, how to use that age in a way where you can probably be bigger as an old villain than you were ever as a young aspiring do-gooder. And I think he learned that with Vince McMahon. And everything from him since is very Vince McMahon-esque. And maybe another thing you learned from Vince McMahon is like how not to be sloppy in your personal life.
No.
There's much stuff that's come out about all the people around him, from Epstein, McMahon. No one talks about it anymore. But that was the most insane story I ever heard. He defecated on a young woman,
yeah,
and then went back to doing it. It's so gross. You think you hear that stuff about Trump, but no one's ever come.
Yeah.
And there's no way in the world that someone's keeping that secret still. You can't pay anyone enough money to keep those secrets anymore. You just can't. There's a trail of dead bodies behind him. Maybe he also learned from this. screw around with the heroes in
there. Where can people, when and where can people find Kayfabe, the documentary?
Episode one, as well as all the other video essays I've done over the last 5 years, are on Means TV. And if you use discount code THISISREVOLUTION, all one word, you get 20% off a yearly or monthly subscription with Means TV. They also have a ton of other great content. Is done by these huge names in left media. So I'm honored that they reached out to me for me to be part of their of their channel. I definitely try to use pop culture, and I think trying to tell more complex stories. We have an episode about philanthrocapitalism called Personal Jesus.
Nice.
We don't need another hero, about a quest to need a hero, even in this left space. There's a lot of, take Fred Hampton, I think is a perfect example. He's 21 years old. And people exalt him to this level where I'm like, nah, I think he said a lot of fool things for a 21-year-old. He was 21 years old. He never got the chance to mature, change. I don't know.
Yeah, it's true.
Who would he have been at 40? I don't know.
Or 30.
Or 30. He becomes kind of like Kurt Cobain and Jimi Hendrix for a lot of people, where they're almost godlike.
Yeah.
And I think that's a problem, especially in the world that we're in, where people keep waiting for the savior, the Messiah, to come in and lead us. And maybe I'm silly. Maybe it's growing up in a church, despite the fact that I don't really believe in much. But I do love that quote that Jim Valvano said.
Jim Valvano?
Yeah. I think that's his name. Basketball coach that passed away from cancer. He said in a religious school he was in, the priest said, God loved ordinary people because ordinary people do extraordinary things every day. And I think you working with actual people on a daily basis, you see those extraordinary things that regular people do every day. They're not magical. You don't always say the right thing. You don't have pre-made speeches. They just show up when it counts. And that's what I'm about. So I have some video essays about that kind of stuff as well. And all that's on Veins TV.
Well, a link to it in the show notes too. Folks, we've been talking with Jason Miles, who's the host of This Is Revolution podcast. Should definitely check that out if you haven't already. He's also a writer and musician, and he has made a documentary called Kayfabe about pro wrestling and politics. If you like what you're hearing, please check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you're watching this on YouTube, hit the subscribe button. If you're listening to us on an audio platform, give us a rate and review. And if you really like us, go to greenandredpodcast.org and hit that support button, or become a patron at patreon.com/greenandredpodcast. Jason, it has been awesome talking to you today. This has been a pretty fun conversation. I have to say, I grew up watching pro wrestling, and there are still members of my family who are in there, even though they're in their 50s, or diehard pro wrestling fans. It speaks a lot to me, I should say. And
go ahead. One of the highlights of my 47 years of life is one of the side jobs my ex and I got. We did music for years. When we came home from touring, we had a side job all the time. And one of the side jobs we had was we worked at WWE Access, which is a meet and greet before WrestleMania. WrestleMania was in San Jose.
Nice.
And I got to meet a ton of wrestlers. And I remember the last day we were there, and we couldn't get any autographs. As staff, we were told not to
ask.
Yeah, asked me to escort them where they needed to go, blah, 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 blah. And Nikolai Volkov, who I grew up watching, he was a bad guy my whole life.
Which, yeah, I remember him.
Sweetest old man. And he had signed a billion autographs. And I went up to him. I said, I know I'm not supposed to talk to you. I just want to say I grew up watching. I think it's really cool. Because these guys can barely walk. It's quite heartbreaking to work there to see Hulk Hogan, who is 6'7", but now he's 6'3". Because he can't stand up all the way.
Yeah.
These guys just beat to hell. And Nikolai Volkov, I still have the autograph. He goes, and I said, but they can't let me have an autograph. He's like, you get the autograph. Shook my hand. It's super cool. So no, dude, it was I love it. And all these things that I do were love letters, if you will. Even the little thing I wrote about punk and politics is not because I hate punk music or I think everybody's a poser or me. It's because I love this stuff. And I want to use the way to explain larger political phenomena that we see.
100%. I'm going to wrap it at that. Everyone else out there, make trouble, misbehave, and we'll talk to you again soon. And we'll hopefully we'll have Jason back on because it's always fun to talk with Jason. Talk to y'all later.